other attunements were out there.
Finally, there's Spider Division. You already know if you're in Spider Division? As the name implies, Spider Division is infiltrators and saboteurs, and that's exactly what they'll be doing within all of your other divisions.
I heard a collective groan from the students.
Listen closely!
Chancellor Wallace was surprisingly sharp, and the crowd was silenced.
This is one of the most important parts of your first year of training. Each of you will have specific opportunities throughout the year to report someone you believe to belong to Spider Division and any supporting evidence. Correctly identifying an individual spider can yield a reward of up to 100 points. However, if your entire division fails to identify even a single member of Spider Division by the end of the year, each division member will lose 250 points, and incorrectly identifying someone as a spider will result in a loss of up to 100 points.
Well, that last part means I can't just write down everyone I can think of. I'll have to keep thinking about this, maybe trade some information. I wonder if the spiders lose points if they're identified. Probably. But if not, maybe I could make an offer to get one of them to come forward. She smiled.
People for Spider Division were selected from all possible attunements, and thus you cannot identify them that way. Attempting to discover the spies in your midst should be a valuable exercise.
Chancellor Wallace folded her hands on the podium.
I'm sure you're eager to meet your classmates. Thus, we'll be concluding this ceremony. You will find your schedules within your orientation packets, but you'll need to head to the dispensary to pick up your uniforms and shield sigils. Good luck, and keep your eyes wide open!
Our first order of business was picking up our uniforms, so Sarah and I headed toward the dispensary.
So, who do you think we'll run into first?
Sarah nudged me. I hadn't really thought about it.
I'm not sure.
She grinned.
I bet a bunch of our friends are here. I know Patrick and Roland passed the tests. Maybe we'll get in some of their classes.
Maybe that really was Patrick I saw earlier.
Yeah, I said absently. That'd be nice.
Sarah rolled her eyes.
Please, restrain your enthusiasm. I can't take the intensity.
I tilted my head at her.
Sorry, Sarah. You've got to keep in mind that I haven't seen any of these people in years. I didn't exactly keep in touch. I don't know if Patrick will even remember me.
Oh, don't be so dramatic. The two of you were practically brothers when you were little.
Patrick still talks about you all the time.
He's excited to see you, even if you're not. Try to look a little happier when you talk to him, for his sake.
I grimaced, but I nodded in agreement.
I'll try.
She was wrong about one thing, though. I only had one brother, and I'd lost him.
Patrick, as much as I'd enjoyed spending time with him, was just a friend.
That said, she was absolutely right that I was being needlessly grim. I needed to at least try to cheer up a little. Being a walking rainstorm wasn't doing a service to anyone. I took a deep breath, trying to clear my head.
How are you doing? Are you happy to have an attunement?
She raised an eyebrow at me.
Yeah, obviously. And my attunement is kind of amazing, too.
Sorry you got stuck with that one. I know it wasn't what you wanted.
I'll probably get used to it. I doubted that, but I was not going to let myself get dragged down into another depressive spiral.
Any idea what attunements our friends got?
Saying the word friends was a little strange. I hadn't seen them in so long. I didn't know if I had that right.
Oh, I didn't ask, but I'm sure we'll find out soon enough.
She stopped and pointed a hand.
Hey, I think that's the dispensary over there.
We headed over, only to find a line leading out the door.
Of course there was a line.
We kept up the small talk as we waited.
I admit, I felt a little better from it.
It was good having a peer to talk to after such a long period of time. I wasn't sure if I was ready to face my old friends, but Sarah's presence was growing on me.
After we finally made our way inside, we got marched into separate fitting rooms, where university staff took our measurements. The tailor gave me a speech he'd obviously given 100 times.
You're a size medium. All uniforms are white, but since you're in Phoenix Division, yours will have red accents. You get 2 uniforms. You will need to wear them during all classes and testing sessions. Civilian clothes are permitted during other activities. Keep your uniform immaculate. There are several cleaning facilities on campus, which you can locate on your map.
He set aside two folded uniforms, then went into a cabinet and retrieved a silver pin with a school insignia about the size of a coin.
Pin this to your uniform before every class and test. Do not forget this. It is absolutely mandatory. The shield sigil gives you basic protection against spells. This is both to handle accidents and to assist you in classes that involve combat exercises.
The tailor handed me the pin.
You will need to recharge the shield sigil every week, as well as before any class that actively involves combat. You will not be permitted to attend class without a pin, and failing to wear your pin more than once can result in disciplinary action up to and including expulsion. The same is true for failing to properly recharge your pin. As an enchanter, you will learn how to recharge the pin yourself, but for the time being, you may have your pin recharged at the divinatory.
I nodded and accepted the pin.
Sign here for your two uniforms and the shield sigil.
I signed the paperwork, accepted the bundle of uniforms, and then went to meet Sarah outside. Sarah and I would be staying in different dorms. I was in the cleverly named Phoenix Male Building, number 27, and she was in the equally scintillating Tortoise Female Building, number 14. But they were both in the same general direction, so we walked together. She gave me an appraising look.
Odds that Spider Division is real?
I shrugged, briefly debating telling her that I was in Spider Division, which, of course, I wasn't.
After some thought, I'd put it somewhere between 0 and 100%, plus or minus a bit.
She rolled her eyes.
It's probably just a mind game. They want us on edge.
I'm not so certain about that. Maybe they're training some people for covert operations. This is supposed to be a military-sponsored school.
Sarah raised her hand to brush a strand of hair out of her eyes. Could be. Or maybe they just really wanted one division per giant tower monster.
I snickered. She had a point.
It's a useful mnemonic device. Everyone knows the god beasts, so you're not going to forget the division names easily.
I suppose. I just feel like they're doing the spider thing to distract us from something else. Maybe a more subtle test.
I chuckled.
You've got the family paranoia, at least.
I'll try to take that as a compliment.
You always were good at pretending.
We finished our speculative banter and arrived at her dorm, parting ways there. It only took a few more minutes to find my own building, virtually identical to the one she was staying in. The buildings themselves were three-story structures, and from their rectangular shape and size, I guessed they housed about a dozen rooms on each floor. Finding my own room was simple enough. I already had the key. It had been delivered to my home a few days before I left, along with my orientation paperwork. I turned it in the lock and examined my new home. It turned out there wasn't much to examine. The room was barely larger than a closet, with a thin bed taking up nearly half the space. The remainder contained a generic wooden desk, a chair, and a cabinet. I found a neat stack of documents on the desk, containing more information about the school and another map of the campus. The crowded space didn't bother me as much as it could have. I'd grown up sharing a room with my older brother until his disappearance, so I was used to having limited space to work with. While some nobles lived in opulent manors with dozens of rooms, House Cadence was comparatively small. Our house had risen into the ranks of nobility through exemplary military service, not our money. I shrugged my backpack off my shoulders, stretching, and locked the door behind me. Freedom. I took a breath of the air that belonged only to me, closing my eyes and savoring it. For the last 2 weeks, I'd felt unwelcome in my former home. My father's disapproval had been almost palpable. I'd done my best to avoid him, and I had some good excuses. There was a seemingly endless supply of documents to prepare for attending the academy, and I studied more to learn about my attunement. So, what did I do with my first moments of free time? More reading. This time, something a little more interesting. I flipped open Trials of Judgment, flipping to the last thing I had written. Still no reply. Frowning, I set the book aside. I had other reading that I wanted to do. I dug through my pack, finding a book on runes that I'd borrowed from my father's library. an introductory primer on empowering runes by Conrad Lake. I'd read the beginning before, and I understood the fundamentals. Enchanters had the ability to permanently infuse objects with power. To do this, I'd have to start by finding the runes that corresponded to the effects I wanted on the item. After that, I'd inscribe the object with the runes. That was the easy part. The hard part was finding a power source for each rune. Since I only had an enchanter attunement, the only mana I had access to was raw mana, basic unfiltered stuff. Most enchantments required specialized types of mana, like fire mana to empower a rune to make a flaming weapon. There were two main ways of getting the mana I needed to enchant something. Either I could find a person who had the right kind of mana and transfer it from them, or I could transfer the mana from an object that contained mana, like, for example, the crystals sitting in my bag. I wasn't reading through the book to figure out what I could do with my crystals. I'd already done that and come to the conclusion that the few crystals I had weren't all that useful on their own. Slimes were the weakest monsters in existence, and the mana crystals they left behind were raw, the same type I could generate on my own. The Bargensi's crystal was earth mana, which was more useful, but not something I had any use for at the moment. No, for now, I wasn't going to make anything. I needed to learn about what I already had. I unsheathed the sword the voice of the tower had given me about halfway, examining the shimmering blade and the four runes on the surface. I was careful not to touch my skin to the aura of frost. I didn't know if it would hurt the wielder or not. That was one of the first things I'd need to figure out. I found my quill and ink and one of the pieces of orientation paperwork I didn't care about, drawing the four runes that I'd seen on the surface of the blade. After another moment of thought, I flipped the sword over and checked the other side to see if the etchings matched. They did. Just four runes, then. Then, having copied the runes, I searched through the enchanting book to find them. I only found two of the four. The first was a pretty simple rune, one I'd seen elsewhere. A rune of resilience, useful for making an object harder to break. The second was definitely some kind of rune of ice, but it differed from the basic one presented in the book. The shape was similar enough to be clearly related, but the one on the weapon was surrounded by an octagon of intersecting lines, one of which connected with the rune. I spent some more time searching the book for the other runes, but they were nowhere to be found. The book's notes on the basic rune of ice indicated that items enchanted with it were dangerous to the wielder, so I decided it was best to keep my hands as far away from the aura as possible, at least until I could discern what the more advanced rune meant. With that established, I sheathed the weapon and lay down on my bed, closing my eyes. I wasn't going to sleep, not immediately. I needed a few moments just to process my situation. I didn't get them, of course. A knock sounded on my door mere instants after my eyes shut. The knocking paused for a moment, then repeated a few moments later. It was quick, insistent. I sighed, pushing myself from the bed and opened the door. A black-clad student was standing outside, his almond-shaped eyes narrowed in scrutiny. He had amber skin, which meant his family was probably from East Edria or Delanos. He stared directly at me for a moment, then asked a single question.
Are you a spider?
I blinked.
No?
He nodded curtly, took the door handle, and shut my door. I continued to stare at the closed door for the next few seconds. Well, that was interesting. Contemplating the encounter, I came to the conclusion that the student was testing for my reaction. I heard another similar knock several moments later, but it wasn't at the next door down. It was too distant for that. He wasn't going to every door in sequence. Either he had a list of specific people he wanted to check, or he wasn't going in order because he didn't want people hearing the conversations at adjacent rooms and taking the time to prepare. Oh, I like this guy. He hadn't given his name, but I'd find it. I kicked off my boots and spent the next few hours reading through runes atop my new bed. The threadbare sheets and single pillow weren't particularly comfortable, but I was glad just to have a private room. While I studied the runes, I contemplated what I could potentially build. My few crystals wouldn't get me very far, but I did have a small discretionary stipend to spend on things outside of what the academy provided. Basic food in the mess hall, lodgings, and uniforms were already covered. I assumed most of the other students who were lucky enough to have a stipend spent it on the much better food that could be found in the assorted restaurants on the campus, or on things like more books or added conveniences. My 4 silver sigils per week were going toward an enchanting fund. One of my first priorities would be to figure out the local rates on buying various types of enchanting materials. My reading indicated that there were a lot more types of mana crystals than I had initially realized, and that there were some alternatives to using crystals or getting help from other attuned, but that they tended to be harder to come by. My first priority? Enchanting the flask where I was keeping the water from the pool in the tower. I didn't know if the effect that had given me my attunement was inherent to the water, or if the water was just a conduit for the goddess to use to give people attunements. If it was the former, I couldn't know if the water's magical properties would remain stable forever, or maybe it would just evaporate if it was left alone. I didn't want that to happen. After doing that bit of reading, I grudgingly got back to the stack of paperwork on my desk. I skimmed over school rules and regulations, as well as things like the details on earning points for graduation. I could worry about those later. I was looking for the campus map. I had something important to do. Finding the map was easy enough. Actually, navigating the campus to find Professor Orden's office was considerably more challenging. Not only were there several buildings that didn't appear on the map, many of the labels were out of date. All in all, it took me nearly 2 hours to find Professor Orden's office on the opposite side of the campus. She was, predictably, not even there. I did, however, find a list on her door of her office hours. The next time she'd be present would be Wednesday, the day before classes. I made a note to come back then. Not only did I want to fulfill my obligation to the voice, I needed to know how the professor was connected. Was she some sort of servant of Katashi? Or maybe Tenjin? Velia's patron visage was Tenjin, the visage of inspiration. It was commonly known that the visages often employed mortal help, even outside of their priesthoods. The presence of a foreign visage in our tower was very strange. If Professor Orden worked for Tenjin, it was likely she needed to know about it. Was there some kind of power play going on? Or was I just indulging childish fantasies of visages playing political games against each other? It was a type of thing I'd read about in stories since childhood, but the last known direct conflict between 2 visages had been over 100 years ago. I headed back in the general direction of my room. The trip hadn't been a total waste of time. I discovered the locations of several facilities I intended to visit later, including the mess hall, multiple shops, the apothecary, and my current destination, the library. Predictably, I found Sarah already inside. She had annexed an entire table with a massive stack of books on her left and 3 open tomes spread out in front of her. Most of the pages I could see showed complex diagrams with runic markings. She was scanning one of them intently, apparently oblivious to my presence. I pulled up a nearby chair, making enough noise that she turned her head with an annoyed look. Her expression shifted from irritation to an inquisitive shift in her eyebrows when she processed who had dared to disturb her studies. "Yes, Corin?" I leaned over the table to examine one of the closer books. Summoning diagrams? Trying to find something powerful to summon to impress everyone before classes start? She shook her head, her expression sinking into a frown.
Common misconception. Summoning monsters is actually one of the least common things that summoners do.
I blinked. What do you do then? She stabbed a finger at a diagram in front of me.
This isn't a summoning diagram. It's a contract. The runes indicate the terms of the contract, and mana is used to enable it. Summoners make contracts with creatures to draw power from them.
I scratched my chin. Like individual monsters? You have to meet them and bind them personally?
Yes, if I want to make a monster do anything, give me power, protect something, or if I want to summon it from a distance, we need to agree to a contract.
I turned to look at her, my eyebrows knitting together.
How does that work with monsters that don't talk?
She flipped the pages to another diagram.
Different diagrams for different monsters. Once I charge it with mana, they basically touch each of the runes to examine them. If they agree, they contribute their own mana, signing the contract.
Huh. Are things like slimes really smart enough to know how to do that? She smirked.
Evidently. But I'm not the type to make a contract with a slime.
Of course not. I huffed out a short breath that could almost be called a snort. Planning out your first contract already? Her smirk broadened.
Who says I don't have one already?
I narrowed my eyes at the implication.
When would you have had the opportunity?
Attunements are given at the end of the judgment, and I doubt you've had a chance to track down any wild monsters in the week since we finished.
Maybe when you tell me about the rest of your tower escapades, I'll let you in on my secret.
Maybe. She tilted her head to meet my gaze. I rolled my own eyes in response, standing up.
Oh, I think I can figure it out on my own.
Enjoy your studies. She laughed.
I look forward to hearing your inaccurate guesses.
I chuckled, already turning over ideas in my head as I continued toward the enchanting section. Removing a list from a pouch on my side, I'd abandoned my much larger backpack in my room. I looked at my list of classes and their book requirements. I've got magic theory on Tashde and Firste, understanding attunements class on Kirste and Tenste. Physical combat doesn't need any books. Let's see, I need the books for introductory runes on Firste and Vaste, and mana manipulation on Tashde. And it looks like I need to pick up an elective at some point, too. Looks like Firste and Tashde will be the busiest, since I've already got two classes on each. Might be smart to pick an elective for a different day. I was sufficiently distracted that I nearly bumped into someone. I looked up just in time, only to freeze in the shock of recognition. She froze, too. For a moment, our eyes met, and I felt a surge of long-buried emotions. Clutching her books tightly to her chest, the girl, no, a young woman now, looked away, fleeing without another word. It was not a coward's move. I had been about to do the same, and I thanked her for taking the necessity away from me. I wasn't quite ready to confront the implications of our meeting here. Apparently neither was she. I pushed her from my mind as quickly as I could, just as I had for years. Enchanting. I was planning to get books on enchanting. I picked up some of the first books I came across, too distracted by my mental athletics to properly focus, and headed for the counter. The librarian, an older man with long and vast gray sideburns, quirked an eyebrow as I set the books down.
A little ambitious, aren't we?
Of the three books I was checking out, two of them were marked advanced, intended for graduates. Oops. I offered him a winning smile.
I'd like to get ahead of the schedule.
The librarian chuckled.
You'll change your mind soon enough. Sign here and here.
He pressed a slip across the table, which I signed. With my mind still spinning in circles, it landed on a particular issue I realized I hadn't sufficiently examined.
I don't know if you know this, but I'm supposed to deliver a message to Lyris Orden. Is that Professor Orden?
Yep,
he confirmed.
That's her.
Good. It would have been embarrassing if I told my whole story to the wrong Orden. Embarrassing and potentially dangerous.
One of the other teachers put you up to errands already.
My lips twitched.
No.
Not unless I counted mysterious book entity as a teacher.
This is a personal favor for someone, but I imagine the errands will come soon enough.
Take my advice. Don't let them make you a servant. Especially not Orden. She'll work you to the bone.
He snatched my signed papers from across the table.
Enjoy your books.
I nodded and swept them under my arm, fleeing the scene. I couldn't help but glance back toward where I had seen Cecily Lambert, but she was already gone. I made it back to the relative shelter of my room, examining my hall from the library. In my hurry, I hadn't actually picked up the books I needed for the semester, but I suspected any copies of those would be long gone. Many students would have rushed straight there to try to save the coin necessary to purchase them. I'd have to hit the bookstore later. The ones I had managed to pick up were interesting, though. Ambient Mana and Its Sources by Relic was the only entry-level book. Advanced Artifice, Permanent Enchantments was something I was deeply interested in, but Inaccuracies in Modern Teachings of Enchanting History sounded considerably duller. A quick glance through the Advanced Artifice book told me that the smug librarian had been right. I needed a stronger foundation before I could get much out of such an advanced book. I could guess at what a personal mana conversion ratio was, but I didn't know the context behind why it was important or how to figure one out. I spent much of the rest of the day reading through my rune book, not daring to brave the outside again and the prospect of seeing anyone else I was familiar with. My stomach would eventually drive me to the dining hall, but my paperwork indicated it was open late, and a later visit was more likely to help me dodge the horrors of social interaction. Social interaction, however, would not be so easily denied. It was a pesky creature, incessant in its hunt. A few knocks on my door, slower and more deliberate than the first set, signaled its next move. I sighed, dislodging myself from my chair and setting down my book. When I opened the door, I found another unfamiliar student on the opposite side. He was broad, blonde, and muscular, a light layer of scruff distributed across his chin. He gave me a curt nod and extended an ungloved right hand, a sign that he was either not a noble or that he already had retainers to protect him.
"Curtis Maddock, you dorm chief."
I accepted his handshake, noting the firmness of his grip and the brightly glowing attunement mark on his wrist. A different symbol graced a second attunement higher up on his arm near the bicep. I blinked.
"Corn Cadence, how do you already have a second attunement?"
He grinned as he retracted his hand and folded his arms, standing a little straighter.
"I'm a second year. Made it up to the fifth floor on last year's final exam."
I raised a hand to scratch my chin, intrigued. "They send you back to the tower as an exam?"
"Yep, right at the end of the first year. First year, a teacher goes with you. Second year, you'll have to go by yourselves. You only need to reach the second floor to pass."
He patted his arm.
"But like I said, my group made it to the fifth last year."
Curtis had immediately made himself much more interesting and worth my time. Naturally, I barraged him with questions.
"How did you make it so far? Was there any particular strategy you employed? Do you remember the specific rooms you had to deal with?"
He chuckled in response.
"Can't tell you about the rooms I do remember. That's part of the test. Wouldn't want to spoil the surprise. We can talk strategy sometime, though, once you're a little better prepared. Anyway, I've got to get to the other rooms. We're going to have a dorm meeting in an hour on the grass outside. Just wanted to invite you."
I nodded in silent thanks. I didn't want to be around that many people, but getting to know someone who had blazed through that many floors in his first year was a worthwhile investment.
"I'll be there."
He waved amiably.
"See you soon."
I closed my door, going back to my studies. I'm going to need more books on the tower. I'd already read several, but they were mostly geared toward the judgment. The other books on other elements of the tower were still intended for people who hadn't ever been to one. I needed information that was more applicable towards someone who wanted to make it higher in the tower. Every floor I explored was one step closer to getting Tristan back, and I was far from giving up. I also needed a book on attunements. I hadn't recognized the ones on Curtis's arm at a glance, which was embarrassing. There were only 8 local ones, but I could only remember about 5 of the symbols at the moment. I'd make it a priority to pick up the book for my attunements class soon. I headed out to the grass after the hour was up, a book still in hand. I stood a few paces away from the gathering crowd while they chatted with each other, awaiting Curtis's arrival. That took a few more minutes, then it was a few more before the grass was fully populated. Curtis instructed us to gather in a circle.
"All right, people! Looks like we've got a few dissidents who aren't going to show. That's fine. They'll just have to miss out on my brilliant sense of humor and style."
He laughed, and there were a few half-hearted chuckles in reply. I appreciated his effort at humor, even if it fell mostly flat.
Anyway, yeah. I stayed here last year, and we made a great team. Well, six great teams, actually. Later in the year, you're going to get split into teams of, you guessed it, six students. So get to know each other while you can, yeah? Much easier to take the tests if you already can work together.
He pointed at himself.
I'll be your dorm chief. You come to me if you have any problems with anyone from this dorm or otherwise, and I'll try to straighten them out. I'll also answer questions, provided I'm allowed to. We're going to go around in a circle and introduce ourselves. Then I'll let you guys take things from there.
He pointed to the guy to his right to start with introductions. I paid minimal attention, only noting people who mentioned experiences that interested me, until the rotation reached someone I hadn't expected to show up. The almond-eyed teen who had knocked on my door earlier.
Jin. Pleased to meet you all.
Jin. Just Jin. He didn't give his surname, nor his attunement. Both omissions were clearly deliberate. He must have caught me looking at him. He flashed a half-grin my way, dark eyes alight with amusement. When the rotation reached me, I kept my own introduction brief, but more informative.
Corn Cadence, Enchanter.
I wasn't going to make any claims about being happy to be there. The lie would have been obvious. A few students later, a short, overweight blonde hooked my attention.
Oh, hey everyone, I'm Tom. McCormick, that is. Most of my friends call me Tommy or Big Tom, but don't worry, it doesn't bother me. Anyway, I guess I'm what they call a mender. Pretty good, huh? I think it's one of the best attunements, except maybe summoners who are pretty much the best at everything.
His rambling was excessive, but there weren't a lot of menders in my dorm. It was mostly other enchanters. If I needed a mender for a group activity later in the year, I'd keep him in mind. After the introductions, we dispersed pretty fast. I noted the general direction Jin was heading, second floor, toward the right, before he disappeared from my line of sight. I'd figure him out. It was just a matter of time.
Chapter 6 Precautions. Wednesday, my final day to prepare before classes started, hit me faster than expected. As I had suspected, all my basic school books were unavailable in the library, so I'd spent some time browsing local shops to find the cheapest used copies that I could. Every coin I saved was one more I could put toward enchanting supplies. I'd looked into those, too, but I didn't have enough context to know what I'd actually need to buy. Mana crystals came in dozens of elemental varieties and several different sizes. I checked the magic book for replies several times, but the voice never wrote anything further. I concluded that either it was too busy or that it could only communicate through the book while it was in the tower. I planned to continue checking periodically anyway. It wouldn't hurt. I bought some basic food, easy-to-store food, for my room as well. It'd be important if I needed to skip going to the dining hall for any reason. I kept to the cheap stuff, wanting to save as much money as possible. With all those basic preparations in place, I spent most of my time reading my introductory books. Most of the students seemed to want to use their last days of freedom to socialize, but I was more interested in getting as much of an advantage as possible. My final errand was one of the most interesting, and one I'd been simultaneously excited and terrified about. It was time to visit Professor Orden and talk about what I'd seen in the tests. I found a long line of students in front of me when I reached her office. Of course there's a line. She's the supervisor for one of the classes. I'm sure a lot of the students are meeting with their supervisors for advice or any way to get an early edge. I was, of course, the only enchanter in line for the class that was meant for diviners and shadows. Jin was at the front of the line. He saw me, quirked an eyebrow, and disappeared into the professor's room. As the students in the line conversed with each other, I considered Jin. His black shirt had a high collar, and he wore gloves on both hands, an irregularity that was most likely designed to conceal his attunement.
He was in the Phoenix Division dorms, which implied that he was an enchanter or a mender. Of course, it was also possible he had a foreign attunement that was similar to ours. Either way, he probably wouldn't be getting training from Professor Orden. She was in charge of diviners and shadows, which had little similarity to the attunements used by the Phoenix Division. If he was a spider with a diviner or a shadow attunement, though, he'd have a great reason to visit her for training or advice. Asking people if they were members of House Spider was a great way to imply he was trying to find them, and thus not a member of House Spider himself. But it was such an obvious tactic for a spider to use that many would suspect him of being one just for doing it, which implied that he was either legitimately trying to gather information or deliberately trying to get people to question if he was a spider or not. Goddess, I wish I had thought to do it first. It sounded terribly entertaining. Maybe I could still get in on the idea later. He exited the room a few minutes later, nodding to me with a smirk as he passed by. I continued to wait as patiently as I could as other students took their turns, my mind traversing several threads as I waited. It was at least an hour before I finally made it inside the door. Professor Orden sat behind a long wooden desk, hands folded neatly in front of her, staring directly at me as I entered. Her crisp black suit and neutral expression were a stark contrast to the piles of everything imaginable that occupied nearly every usable space in the room. I couldn't see how she'd made it behind the desk without climbing over it. There were file cabinets blocking the paths on both sides of the desk, and the walls were lined with bookshelves. While there were some books, the shelves primarily seemed to carry miscellaneous trinkets. Bits of metal, tiny crystals, a crystalline feather, and what looked like a blackened human skull were sprawled haphazardly across them. A collection of masks occupied the little empty space on the back wall.
"Close the door behind you,"
she gestured with one hand, and I complied. When I looked back, she'd returned to her neutral position, hands folded in front of her.
"You're not in my class. What brings you here, Cadence?"
I frowned. I knew her position connected her to a class of people that gathered information, but I hadn't expected her to know me. It took me another moment to realize that she didn't need to. I was wearing my house's symbol on my glove, like I always did, and I had an attunement glowing on my forehead that put me in a different class. She was probably just being observant and deliberately trying to disarm me. I could appreciate that sort of thing, but I wasn't in the mood for theatrics. I was nervous enough already. "I have a message for you, but my understanding is that it's something that shouldn't be overheard. Is this a good place and time, or..." She waved a hand and stood up with deliberate effort.
"Just wait for a moment."
Professor Orden traced a pattern on the wall behind her with a single finger, leaving a gleaming trail where her finger made contact. "She's drawing runes." I didn't recognize the specific shapes, but she drew several of them. She turned around, folding her arms.
"This had better be worth my effort."
"It's secure now?" She nodded in confirmation.
"I took the basic precautions. Out with it."
I glanced at the runes, then back to her.
"The voice of the tower would like to speak to you."
She let out a string of creative expletives, the kind and variety that you're definitely not supposed to say in front of children.
"I'm pretty sure that's anatomically impossible," I replied.
"Quiet! I need to think."
She shut her eyes, folding her arms again. "Is this really that big of a problem? I haven't even told her the details yet." It was several moments before Professor Orden reopened her eyes, taking a deep breath.
"I spoke too soon. This office is secure, but not secure enough for this conversation. I will contact you again at a later time. If you have not already been informed, you are most likely in significant danger. Take precautions. Do not speak to anyone else of this."
I held up my hands in a warning gesture.
"Significant danger? Can you, elaborate about that, please?"
Orden tightened her lips.
"Just the fact that you know about the existence of the voice means you probably attracted the attention of one or more of the visitors. The kind of attention that usually results in people disappearing. So as I said, take precautions."
I raised an eyebrow.
"Precautions?
Against a visage? Goddess above, boy, were you never briefed on this? Never mind. A visage isn't going to be dropping out of the sky to annihilate you directly. Their agents are the ones you need to worry about. I can't give you details here. Wherever you're sleeping, ward it. Be thorough. Set up means for contacting help rapidly. Keep a weapon near you at all times. If you're attacked directly, retreat to a populated area and make as much noise as possible. By ward it, you mean... The professor held up a hand to stop me. Don't tell anyone about the details of your precautions, including me. Her lips pursed, and she turned to the bookcase on her right, retrieving a key from the clutter. She tapped 3 times on a drawer in her desk, whispered something, and then turned the key in the lock. Once the drawer was open, she whispered again and reached inside. There was an intricately carved chest inside the drawer, as well as a small pouch. The box immediately caught my eye. The runes on it resembled the ones on the entrance doors to the serpent spire, but I'd never seen similar styles on human-made equipment. She removed the pouch and closed the drawer. You'd better have good enough information to make this worth my trouble, Cadence. I lifted the bag. It didn't have much heft to it, but there were at least a few coins inside. Thank you. You can thank me by leaving quickly, pretending this conversation never happened and not dying until we have an opportunity to discuss things further. Goddess, what did I get myself into? What if someone asks why I was here? You had a message to deliver from my sister, Kayla. It was a physical letter. You didn't read it. I thanked you, paid you a courier fee, and sent you on your way. Where would I have met this sister? No one is going to ask you that, she sighed. But you're right to ask. Say she was at the school's recruitment tent outside the tower. No one will think to check. Now go. Her tone didn't brook any argument. She sat back down, moving to her default position, waiting for the next student. I left the room, walking hurriedly back to my dorm. The first thing I did when I got back to my room was try to write down the runes that I'd seen on the box in her drawer. I'd only had a few moments to look at them, but I thought I had a pretty good recollection of what some of them looked like. My basic rune book was no help, but advanced artifice had some clues. The central rune was something called a containment rune, and it was used for storing things inside a container that were larger than the container itself. I'd heard of things like that before. Bags that were used to store large numbers of items, for example. There were diagrams for the runes for making exactly that type of bag, but while the central rune matched that design, nothing else did. I came close to identifying one of the other runes, the one just to the left of center. It looked similar to a rune designed for governing range for teleportation spells, but the bottom section was drawn differently. The one on the far right? I was pretty sure I'd either remembered it wrong, or it was just a bunch of squiggles someone had made while they were bored. I still didn't know enough to understand what the whole thing was supposed to do, but I could tell this kind of thing was powerful. The kinds of runes I saw in the introductory runes book had mana values in the single digits. The most similar teleportation range rune I could find was classified at citrine level and required air mana and transference mana in the hundreds. There were a number of other runes on the box that I couldn't remember as well, and ones I couldn't make out at all from my angle. I really wanted one. Maybe I could convince her to let me take a look at it in more detail later. I also wanted to know why she'd whispered before opening the drawer. Was she unlocking the drawer, or maybe disabling a trap? I sighed. It didn't matter. The box, as interesting as it was, wasn't what I had to work with. She'd told me to take precautions, so that was the next thing on my agenda. What could I do with the resources I had on hand? I had my handful of crystals, a few silver sigils, and some bronze ones, and whatever she'd put in that pouch. I checked the bag, fully expecting it to contain more wealth than I'd seen in my entire life. It didn't. Just a half dozen extra silver sigils, and more interestingly, a single finger-sized transparent crystal. I'd have to figure out how to identify crystals at a glance at some point.
In the meantime, I packed the crystal away with my others and flipped open the basic runes book. I managed to locate a couple of the runes I'd seen the professor drawing on the wall, and I wondered how she'd been doing it without crystals in hand. Was she powering the runes herself? If so, how many attunements did she have? The one on the left was Silence, a simple rune for blocking noise. The other one was Blindness, which blocked vision. Drawing them on walls wouldn't do anything on its own, though. Some of her runes must have been to tie the runes to the wall as an area of effect, then to focus them outward, preventing people outside from seeing or hearing what was within. Predictably, I couldn't find those runes in the basic book, even though they were the most important. And I still didn't have the materials to power any of those runes, even if I knew them. Maybe I was thinking too much in terms of runes. I still hadn't even tried to make one yet, so it was probably a little too soon to be formulating my defense plan around them. There were simpler ways to protect myself, at least until I'd taken a few days of classes and made some test runes. It didn't take me long to purchase a few mundane supplies at a nearby store. I also checked the school rules for modifying the interior of the room. I could make some basic alterations as long as I fixed them before I left. Good. Nailing my door shut at night wasn't exactly elegant, but it was a pretty effective deterrent. Much more than a simple lock, which undoubtedly any number of spells, or even mundane tricks, could remove. It would be pretty tough to dislodge a board nailed to the wall without anyone noticing. Eventually, I'd get a silence rune so that people didn't hear me nailing a board over my door every night. I considered setting traps, but in a small enclosed space, I doubted I'd be able to make them any more of a threat to an intruder than they were to me. My room only had one entrance, the door. That was fortunate. I didn't know how I'd handle anything as vulnerable as a window. I also bought chalk. I'd place a small chip in the hinge of the door when I was about to leave. If I came back and found it crushed, it would imply that someone had been in my room while I'd been gone. With some effort, I switched around the configuration of my room, putting my bed on the opposite side. If someone was going to blast straight in from the doorway, I'd be out of their line of attack. My preparations felt woefully insufficient to handle any real threat, but most of the other options I considered were either too expensive, lining the walls with anti-magic materials, logistically infeasible, sleep somewhere other than my dorm room, or outside of my current capabilities, warding the walls. I didn't sleep much that night, but I felt some comfort from the sword cradled in my arms, and the aura of frost seeping through the scabbard and provided a reassuring chill. Tash Day, the first day of classes. I hadn't been murdered in the middle of the night. Success! I didn't feel that successful, though. I felt exhausted, cranky, and a little bit numb. As it turns out, sleeping with a frost-enchanted sword in your arms has some disadvantages. For the future, I'd remember to sleep with my dueling cane nearby instead of my sword. I could already hear the sounds of the parade of students heading their way toward the mess hall, trying to get in a meal before classes started. As much as it dismayed me to come into the presence of people again, my stomach was feeling neglected, so I decided to join them. I winced at the damage to the wood as I unhooked my board from the doorway. There was no doubting that the board would be an effective delay, but it was going to do an unsustainable amount of damage if I had to keep it up for long. I'd have to look into getting a chain to replace it eventually. Possibly several chains, ideally enchanted ones. With that done, I realized I still wasn't in my school uniform, and I'd been told it was mandatory for classes. Like all of the school uniforms, mine was primarily white, but it was accented with copper buttons and crimson epaulets to signify that I was part of Phoenix Division. Red wasn't really my color, but the uniform fit me better than I'd expected, and I had to admit that the floor-length overcoat was pretty nice. I pinned on the shield sigil, and I immediately felt more like I was really attuned. I had a magical shield. I wondered how much it had to cost to provide every student with one of these. Did all our actual soldiers get them, too? Putting the pin on also made me feel a good deal safer. I had no illusions that it would help me if Katashi came for me directly, but a protective barrier could help if someone else tried to get rid of me. I resolved to wear the pin at all times, even when I was sleeping, especially when I was sleeping. I belted on my sword, which I really needed to name at some point. All the best magic swords had names, and headed to the mess hall. The sense hit me almost as soon as the building was in sight. I'd expected the dining hall food to be bland and uninspired, but the smells that filled the air were thick sauces and heavy spices. Some kind of curry, maybe? I loved curry, but I hadn't had it since a family vacation to Delanos in my youth. It wasn't common in traditional Valian cuisine. The line was less inspiring than the smell. It took me at least half an hour of waiting in the throng of students to get inside the door. I'd say it added to the anticipation, but I still would have preferred instant gratification. I spotted a couple familiar faces amongst the students in the line. Patrick Wayland, Lisa Stone, and a few others that I'd gone to school with as a child. No doubt there were many others among my former classmates in the line who were too different in appearance for me to recognize. My 3 years of private tutoring had scraped my relationships down to the bone. I didn't resent my father for pulling me out of school. I understood his reasoning, his lack of trust for the system that had failed to adequately train my brother for his contest against the games of the goddess. I did resent his adamant refusal to allow me to visit with my friends. Letters helped for a time, but within a year, most of my friendships had atrophied from disuse. When I neared the front of the line, I saw a list of meal options. I could pick from curried chicken, salmon, and some kind of unfamiliar pastry called a sinigar cake. I picked the chicken and sides of seasoned potato slices and a mixture of vegetables. It was a disconcertingly good meal. I grew suspicious. Were we being lulled into thinking we'd get excellent food so that it could be taken away at a later time? Or maybe it was just the fact that this school was attended by those who had been wealthy enough to take an attunement test, and thus they had high standards. I wasn't sure. For the moment, at least, I wasn't going to complain. After a significant amount of searching, I managed to find an empty table to sit alone. I had a few minutes of precious silence, sipping the apple juice I'd chosen for a beverage and reading a book before Sarah manifested in front of me. I didn't even have a chance to groan before she'd put down her plate and sat down. It was too early for me to interact with the living, and in spite of my general fondness for Sarah, she still was another entity and thus a toll on my exhausted mind.
Corin?
She gave me a cat-like grin, slicing into her own chosen dish with relish.
Good morning, brother.
I closed my book, looking up to pin her eyes with mine. They were lighter than my own, more like my father's. Good morning, my dear sister. If my reply fazed her in any respect, she didn't show it. Affectionate terminology gamble, unsuccessful. We continued our staring contest until I very deliberately smiled, speared a potato with my fork, and turned to bite it. Mmm. The food here is shockingly delicious. Think it's a trap?
You've always been so suspicious of everything.
She raised her own fork, then speared one of my potatoes with it. My eyes flared in indignation, but she paid them no heed.
Even when we were children... Sometimes, you know, a potato is just a potato.
I nodded. Except that one. That's the one I laced with a deadly toxin. I meant to serve it to one of my enemies later, but alas. She reached up, putting a hand over her chest.
I fear I can feel my heart's last rapid thrums even now.
She contorted her lips.
Or wait. They'd probably be slower, not faster, wouldn't they? Alas, I feel the last glacial pulses of my frozen...
Both glacial and frozen? Seems a little excessive.
Not when your heart is as cold as mine, frigid with the frost of betrayal by my own dear, darling brother. who is also my sibling.
I stabbed another potato. On second thought, I think this was the poisoned one. Goddess, thanks for everything. I popped it into my mouth. Mmm, delicious. Tastes like eternal suffering. She raised an eyebrow.
I didn't think you were a believer in the punishments.
Oh, I'm not. But it was too good a line for me not to say it.
That's your idea of a good line? Please, Corin. I know you haven't been to a school in years.
That's low, sister.
But even you should have higher standards for dramatic monologues. You never know when you might need one.
I paused, cutting into my chicken.
Okay, that last part actually managed to sound vaguely ominous.
I'll give you credit for that. She gave a mocking bow over the table.
Thank you. It feels so good to be appreciated on occasion.
But I'm confident you had more of a reason to be here than just to engage me with displays of your scintillating intellect.
Scintillating? My, now I almost suspect you want something from me.
I took a bite of the chicken.
I thought I was supposed to be the suspicious one. Touché. Well, as it happens, your confidence has at least some degree of merit. I wanted to ask if you'd read what was in the morning paper.
I shook my head. I barely ever follow the news. Rarely anything of interest.
Ah, but if you don't read the paper, you'll miss the occasional intriguing bit that's buried beneath the rumors, gossip, and advertisements.
I knew she was baiting me, but the hook sunk. And this intriguing bit would be...
two unconnected pieces that paint an interesting picture if one imagines they're connected. One is a report of Edrian troop movements along our southern border. They're posturing.
They do that all the time. Edria likes to keep us nervous, flex their military muscle. She continued, ignoring my interruption.
The second is a rumor that Tengen hasn't attended the last 3 council meetings.
That caught my attention. Tengen, the visage responsible for overseeing the Serpent Spire, the one in which I'd taken my own trial, and the only tower local to our kingdom. As our local visage, he frequently interacted with the local government, serving as an advisor to the Queen and the Council of Lords. But it wasn't Tengen that I'd seen in the tower. It was Katashi, the visage normally associated with the Tortoise Spire and the theocracy of Delanos. The visages did travel, of course, but that was supposed to be rare. Missing one council meeting would have been understandable, but 3 in a row did strike me as odd. Adding in another visage being inside her tower while foreign troops marched nearby, that sounded a lot like a warning flag for an invasion. Sarah saw something in my expression.
You caught it too, then. If Tengen is missing, something may be amiss. Maybe Edria is finally ready to march.
People have been saying that for years. I spoke the words, but my mind was racing in other directions. I might be the only person who knows about Katashi's presence in our tower, other than Vera, I suppose, and Karis, if he survived. Vera said he was a foreigner. Is Karis from Edria? Or off the continent entirely? Could he have something to do with Tengen being missing? It was a disconcerting thought. Aside from the visages and the god beasts themselves, I couldn't think of any entity I'd ever heard of that could pose a threat to a visage. The goddess herself didn't count, of course. She'd never been known to directly intervene in mortal affairs. Of course, Katashi could have been the reason that Tengen was missing, too. That was a far worse scenario.
I know, but their constant troop movements generate complacency, which makes us vulnerable for when they do finally decide to strike.
I nodded, too wrapped in my own thoughts to give her a coherent reply. We ate quietly for another minute.
You know something.
I frowned, looking up at her.
What makes you say that? I know you, Corin. The years haven't changed us that much.
Or at least, you don't want to admit they have. That's why you keep teasing me, prodding me, testing me. You're not going to like what you find. But she was right on one count, of course. I did know something.
Later. I can't talk about it here.
She wrinkled her nose.
You're always so careful. Just tell me.
I shook my head. Not about this. It's serious, Sarah, and I'm serious. Sarah paused her eating, tilting her head to the side. After a few moments, she nodded. All right. But we're going to talk about this again later. I can't make any promises. I could have just lied to her, but it didn't feel appropriate. I didn't like the idea of deceiving someone who is sincerely seeking knowledge.